and welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Adam Brimelow, and I'm really looking forward to this short series of podcasts where we're talking to senior leaders and challenging them to come up with one big idea to make a lasting difference in health and care. Something they'd do if they were put in charge of the whole thing for a day with unfettered power. Something that would make the system tick, improve things for patients, for staff, or wider communities. The first trust leader to step up to the challenge is Helen Ray, Chief Executive of Northeast Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust, who's got a big idea for the smarter deployment of ambulance teams to help patients get the right care faster. In light of the pressures we're seeing this winter, it's got to be worth a listen. I hope you enjoy it. Helen, congratulations. You've staged a mini coup. You're in charge of all of health and social care, but just for a day. But any change you make can be a real lasting change. So what's the big idea that you would put in place?
Thanks, Adam. So the coup was difficult, but it's really nice to be in that position now. So what I want to do is really radically review the pathway systems access through the 999 and 111 services. In talking to staff both in hospitals and in ambulance services, it's a big change that people want to see us make. It's something that has worked relatively well during COVID times, and something that could make a significant difference, not just across the urgent emergency care frame, but in wider capacity. So a single big change that allows a different access route through those services.
So what's the fundamental problem that's happening now that this would help to address?
So the algorithms that are built within those pathways are naturally designed to be risk averse. And what that results in is an overprescription in ambulance attendants when a much different interface or connection for the caller could be needed. We, in short, send very experienced paramedics often to see patients with conditions that actually need something but don't need two people turning up in an ambulance to help and support that patient. I'd like us to open up much greater access for the call handlers and clinicians after assessment to be able to refer to direct alternative urgent care services. The directory of services are there for those, but currently they are disconnected quite often from the pathways. And bringing those together in a much more seamless and much more cohesive way would allow the user, the caller, to get a much quicker direct access to what they really need rather than what they get or what we give them at this moment in time.
So what you're saying rings bells with me in some ways, in the way that 111 was presented in the first instance. That was the idea behind it, wasn't it?
It really was, Adam, yes. So I think my recollection would be that Pathways was originally set up in Hampshire and the developers wanted to test it as part of an ambition for a single point of access. And indeed, NIAS, where our work as chief executive currently, was the first place to test that in 2006. But that's a long time ago. And it's morphed into something very different to its intent now. And the 111 service in particular feels to be the catcher's mitt. So if something else is getting dropped, 111 seems to have the catcher's mitt as it's the only point, alongside the nines, of course, that is a true 24/7, 365 call contact point for the population. And that's okay, but that is incoming. And what we do outgoing from the call contact is the thing that really needs to change, I think.
Because I know that one characteristic of the types of calls that are coming through is that there are more people who have more severe needs. And that might be to do with sort of pent-up demand over the pandemic. It might be a whole variety of reasons. Would this approach address that challenge?
I think it really could, providing there were greater access, as I've said, via those local directory of services. that allow point of access booking of patients at a suitable time for them, hopefully, in line with what their presenting condition requires. It needs us to take a bit of a risk in reality. Nothing in health and social care is without risk, but the risk that we are carrying currently across that pathway is so huge that we need to turn the dial to make something different. It will feel as though we're moving in a more to an area that is more risky, but actually overall I think it de-risks the system.
I suppose it would mean extending and increasing the skill mix in those call centres as part of this.
Yes, it would. But it doesn't necessarily mean that those multidisciplinary teams who will be needed to make this really work all needed to be in the call centre. Of course, co-location brings benefits in terms of learning and development across that multidisciplinary and multi-agency team. But having greater access, for example, direct access to opportunities for social prescribing, next day aging clinics, diagnostics, they would all still locate within their current environments, but that contact access could be much more seamless for patients. So we already access thousands of GP slots per day through that route. But actually, wouldn't it be great if we could access direct diagnostics in a different way? Wouldn't it be great if we could make sure that loneliness was tackled? Because lots of people, for example, will contact our services, not just ambulance services, but services right across health and social care due to loneliness. It is a massive issue for us. So, you know, how could we address that in a different way?
You talk there about social prescribing. A lot of what you're talking about is the sort of the routes of care that people would be sent on to through this call centre. But isn't the real problem here the lack of capacity in those alternative channels, the GPs, community services, physios, social care staff, and so on?
I would absolutely agree that capacity is an issue. The needs of the population have changed, haven't they, so significantly over the 10 years. Many people would say that was entirely predictable and that the health and social care service hasn't shifted, pivoted sufficiently to be able to deal with that. You know, the baby boomers living longer, multiple comorbidities, and the post-COVID backlogs that we're dealing with is what you're alluding to. So this idea really relies on that much wider buy-in to the sector. It needs a multi-agency approach. And whilst I do agree, Adam, that capacity is an issue, this is about right sizing and right purposing so that people are able to readily access the services that they actually really do require without having to move around the system, which is what we do now. We hand people off far too much. And if they can't get the access they desire or want on the first call that they make, they will try different routes, they will try different calls, they will try different organisations. So wouldn't it be great to allow people to come through, the majority of people to come through a single route, and then we cascade that out on their behalf?
So Helen, of course, everyone's operating in a more integrated and more system-based environment now, and I know that poses particular issues in terms of the ambulance sector. But do you see a role for ICSs in this proposal?
Absolutely. From a structural approach, they are absolutely key. You know, let's be realistic as well, Adam. They hold the purse strings now, and that will always be a pinch point, given that you're talking about capacity, and I would agree with that. But given the demands on the whole of the health and care sector, I know that ICSs, ICBs, are ambitious to see public health more at the forefront of their ambition. So this big idea may start to create the capacity to focus on that, focus on public health more and more, which has to be a key driver and is in the ambitions of the ICB. So how you sell an idea, how we sell this big idea, has to resonate with the ICBs. It has to resonate with colleagues, and it has to be built in a frame that allows us more effective and more efficient services. It shouldn't just be more. It shouldn't be a new tier. It should be something that is better, something that is more effective.
So this is clearly a big idea that could bring beneficial change, or could it? Is there anything like this that actually is happening on the ground here and now?
There is some work that is ongoing, and it's working in pockets. So in the ambulance sector, for example, there is a critical piece of work going, looking at the amount of people that flow into what is the category 2 stream for ambulance services. That is usually about 60% of an ambulance sector's workload. And there are other aspects of work within community services looking directly at that, and in primary care. But all of that is happening in pockets, in siloed pieces of work. And for me, as a very ambitious leader, it's too slow and it's too small. So let's make it bigger and let's run faster at it so that we can make a change before we go into the next cycle of winter.
And in terms of efficiency, obviously everyone's looking for gains on that side of things, and also in terms of staff satisfaction, potential changes there, working relationships. How do you see this idea playing out? What kind of impact could it have?
Yeah, so why take an idea forward if it's not going to make things better for our patients and staff? A couple of things on that. So measure it is what I would say. We're not really always very good at baselining where we are before the idea launches. And we're not really that good at impact measuring how it plays through. I do think that this has potential to reduce current risk for patients. So if it saves a life, that's measurable. If it reduces footfall to our emergency departments, because we do overwhelm those emergency departments, they are pinch points in our system. If it allows us to enhance access to specialist services through a diagnostic pathway so that patients have their diagnostic before they are sitting in front of somebody, lots of that happens, but it could happen more. It could even out the pressures, particularly for our primary care and community colleagues who, despite the GP bashing that we have seen most recently, are absolutely overwhelmed and seeing, you know, huge percentages more patients than they have ever seen. It could improve working relationships and trust. We still work in our pockets, by and large, in organisations. And coming back to the ICB, one of the roles, obviously, for the ICBs and provider collaboratives is to bring that together in a different frame. I really believe it would improve patient satisfaction. The patients, by and large, still really value the NHS, but we do know that they are somewhat disgruntled with it at this moment in time. I think this could turn that corner. And it would definitely, in my opinion, improve working lives for colleagues because they'd be doing the job that they want to do, the job that they signed up to do, and the job that they love.
So, Helen, let's have a final word then about the doability of this idea, where one is well nigh impossible, 10 is this is a simple, straightforward thing which we could just do tomorrow. Where does it fit on that scale?
It's not simple to do, Adam, but I want to put it below a 5 in its simplicity. I think it is doable. I think it is achievable if we hold the right frame together with it. I think if it could be done at ICB level relatively easily, if the whole of the organisations within the ICB framework across that health and social care frame came together with this ambition. I'm very optimistic, and I often think about Helen Keller in that optimistic frame, so the American author. So Helen Keller said, "Optimism is the faith that leads us to achievement. And nothing can be done without hope and confidence." So I am confident that this is doable, and I am hopeful that that one big idea can be seen to fruition across our system and seen through very quickly.
That's it. Many thanks again to Helen. A great idea, and we have more to come in this series. A reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. And keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.